Welcome to the Perfectly Sane Show, episode 579. I am Chris, as always, joined by Tony.
You can take my sexy green M&M out of my cold, dead hands, you monsters.
And for once, we're not talking about Shrek, which I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing.
He started out with that sexy green, and I'm like, oh, God, here we go again. And then he swerved with the M&Ms, and I'm like, is the green one the sexy one?
Oh, I guess you missed that Twitter discourse today.
Chris, you missed out on all of
my things. Welcome to the party, Chris.
It was actually trending today.
Green. I knew they were giving them different personalities or something, but I didn't realize the green one was the sexy one.
She was hot. She wore her boots before. Like, she had that, like, sexy affect. Now she's, like, wearing sneakers. She's, like, more, like...
She's, like, sporty. She's like Sporty Spice now.
That's right.
They were all, like, good-looking. None of them were bad-looking. So there wasn't, like, Ugly Spice or anything like that. Earl's here.
I really have nothing to add to the M&M discourse. Except that I did not realize how many people had their sexual awakening to a green M&M.
That's a little terrifying.
It wasn't my awakening. It was like New Horizon. New Horizon. You get bored of like the vanilla porn. You gotta go into like deeper and deeper categories.
Jeff likes his porn chocolate filled.
What kind of M&M is the green one?
He's a little slut.
I think she's just a normal chocolate
M&M. Give me the slutty M&Ms. Like,
I mean, that's what people are asking for, so he's not wrong.
But like, is she like peanut butter M&M, an almond M&M?
I think she's just a normal M&M.
Just a normal one, okay.
Peanut.
Yeah. It's just got like eyelashes and shit, right?
The yellow one is a peanut M&M, yes. Yeah.
It's also weird that the M&Ms have gender. But that's a different discussion.
So, yeah.
Yes, because M&Ms, I'm guessing, don't have sexual organs. And
we can make them.
I bet there's porn.
I was about to say, I'm sure there's video proof that they do have sexual organs.
Oh, God.
Somebody will tell us.
If you lick the candy shell enough times, you get a hole.
Okay.
God. Jeff is here.
It's like that episode of... Squid Game. We have to keep licking the cookie till it cracks.
Yeah.
Or they kill us. That's Squid Game, right? Like, they kill you if you lose?
Yeah, you didn't watch it?
No, I don't. Yeah. Looked like they played, like, dumb games. And
I personally did not think it was that good, but it wasn't, like, terrible either.
I think it was just... I enjoyed it. I think it was fun, but I think...
It had some cool visuals, and the games fun, were cool.
But yeah, I think it was a lot of people's kind of like it was kind of the battle royale that broke through.
I just thought that twist at the end, like, it was supposed to be like a big deal. I was just like, so what? Like, I don't know. But anyways, I don't want to spoil it. So
watch it at some point.
There's better shows.
That's the problem. Like, there's so many shows that
you can't. You'll never be able to watch them all.
Yeah. If you miss one. You missed the discourse on one. There's like seven more that have popped up in the next week.
They're currently discoursing.
Yeah.
Right through my veins.
It's very difficult to keep up with everything. It's like, I don't know how like entertainment reviewers do it. So
they don't.
I mean, they don't.
I think they fail miserably.
Yeah.
This first 5 minutes here is actually podcasting gold, I think.
It is.
It really is. Like, we should have a huge fan base.
Like four people instead of three. It'd be awesome.
If we could maintain this for more than 5 minutes, we should be huge.
Well, I mean, every week we just need to see M&M to come out.
I have no trouble maintaining things for longer than 5 minutes.
Did you say a sissy M&M?
A sexy M&M.
Oh, I think a sissy M&M too.
Okay.
I mean, if...
I don't know what that means.
Ah, Chris, I'll show you the categories.
No. I mean, sometimes we do talk about M&Ms or beer or Shrek. Sometimes we talk about video games. There's some big news in games this week. So instead of us jumping right into doing our top 10s of 2021, because who cares about that? There's a $70 billion story out there.
69.
I care, Chris.
69. Yes. Well, I mean,
68.7.
So not quite 69. No, definitely not 70.
Nice. What's a few billions between friends?
It's a lot of money. But
I will say I enjoyed everybody arguing about it because like it came out. I think somebody said it was like close to. It was close at 70. Then it was like, no, it was like, it's 68 point something. People are like 69.9. Like, when you're talking about billions of dollars, I really do not care. I really don't think.
The biggest acquisition, I didn't realize this. I mean, I knew it was super huge, like, obviously, duh. But, like, I didn't realize how much bigger the price tag was.
It's bigger than Fox and Disney.
So, I'm just sticking in the video game realm. Like, I didn't realize Bethesda was $7 billion compared to this $70 billion. Like I didn't realize that.
Yeah, it's like almost almost 10 times as big as that Bethesda acquisition, which is just kind of mind blowing. But yeah, Activision has been bought by Microsoft. So in case anybody that was listening didn't understand what the hell we were talking about.
So Melissa had like left for work and I'm in bed and I'm looking at this news on Twitter and she came back, she forgot something, she came back in and I fucking told her the news like it's someone had died. Like she knew like what that would mean. You know, it was like I was saying fucking so got in a plane crash. So I was like, Melissa, Microsoft bought Activision. She's like, oh yeah?
Like you know, like okay, it, bye.
It was, I know, but it was like that big of a deal. But you know, I guess he's, if he told someone that it's completely divorced from this, like they'd just be like, "What?" I don't know. What do you guys want to talk about it? When do we get to play Call of Duty?
I mean, the end of the year. Right now,
you can continue to play Call of Duty, Jeff.
That's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
I get free Call of Duty next? Do you guys are we getting the next Call of Duty like next November for free?
No,
I bet we get the multiplayer for free.
I don't think this acquisition will be done until June of next year.
I could see them putting it on Game Pass though this year.
That could happen.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Dependent on their contract with Microsoft with Sony.
Yeah. And also, like, I mean, Microsoft won't be in charge of Activision until the acquisition goes through all the
right,
which is why which is also kind of funny when you got interviews with Phil Spencer being like, "Oh yeah, you know, like, yeah, the games are still going to come to PlayStation." It's like, yeah, because you don't own them, you can't be like, ha, 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 "Suckers, we're not going to put games on your system before the government says we can."
I saw that Patrick Klepek and Rob Zachney had like written up a piece for Waypoint or Vice Gaming or whatever they're called now, and kind of like his blurb on it. Klepek's blurb was like, you know, the government should look into this. And they're going to like that's. Like that has to happen. Like these mergers have to go through a regulatory board. Microsoft did not make this announcement if they were not 100% confident that this was going to be approved.
Yeah. Because I think if it's not approved, they're on the hook for something like $3 billion.
Yeah, which evidently is nothing to them because this was an all-cash acquisition. They're paying Activision out, just buying outright in cash. Because
the other thing that was fascinating is like this doesn't seem like this was a multi-year approach. Like this seems like this was pretty much since the fall. Because again, this is the biggest story in gaming in quite some time. So everybody's had coverage on it. Like they were like Bobby was trying to create some positive buzz. So he was looking to buy a gaming site, which is one way to get positive press, I guess. and
like that's even going to work.
Buy the press.
I like this strategy. You buy the sites, everybody leaves, because that's what happens whenever they buy one of these sites. Then they just go to a different site and write about you. Like,
yeah, and then what? They write about the fact that you bought the site and how like the coverage is so positive of you now. But yes, and then like, they were looking for other buyers. I guess they didn't want Microsoft. And like, nobody was offering the money Microsoft was offering, so they just sold to Microsoft.
Nobody has the money Microsoft has.
Yes.
Like,
but I think they were hoping. I think they were hoping that like, or Google or Amazon would be interested, because like, you know, they are trying to make strides in gaming, and what better way to do it than buying the biggest third party company out there.
Honestly, Amazon probably, Google and Amazon probably could also easily buy anybody up if they wanted to. I don't know how serious either of those two are about being in the game space.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. It's like, I mean, like we've seen them flirt with it, especially Google, because they have Stadia and stuff like that. But it's they're flirting, but they don't want to take us home. So,
right.
To use a very bad analogy.
But yeah, like this, it's a massive consolidation. I mean, we won't see the effects of this for years. Like, up front, like, we all play on Xbox. I think it'll probably be, like, we'll see it as, you know, good for our wallets, I guess, up front.
It's also, like, I don't know. I skipped Call of Duty this last year, but if it's free, I mean,
yeah,
free with your sub. But yeah, like that's
yeah. What all this is. We all know. Yes, but yeah. You know, my initial reaction was kind of the same with you, Chris. Where it's kind of probably not a good thing that there's so much consolidation. Like, you know.
Oh, I'm gonna.
It makes me think of the Disney thing. It really does, where it's like Disney bought all of this shit, and it's like you bought 20th Century Fox. You're not gonna make 20th Century Fox movies, you know? Let's say you're a Crash Bandicoot fan. Are they gonna make Crash Bandicoot games? They might not. They got Rare and did jack shit with them for fucking ever. Like, they've still not made a Banjo game. They made one.
The counterpoint to that, though, would be that Activision had no intention of making Crash. Because as we've learned...
They made Crash 4!
But as we've learned over the last few years, like the company that made Crash 4 was switched to Call of Duty DLC within the past year.
Yeah, I know. But but this is like an accelerator. I don't know. When you put everything under one umbrella, entity's called the shots. Like,
and right, I get that, but I think from... Okay, overall, I think this is a terrible, 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 terrible thing. But, I mean, from the flip side, I guess to your specific point, is that it's actually better if you're a fan of Crash or Spyro, because there is no pressure for Microsoft to have to do Call of Duty every year anymore. Like, Call of Duty was Activision's business model. That was pretty much their bread and butter, and then the odd Blizzard game here and there. Microsoft doesn't need that every year. If anything, if they're wise, they would do a stamping of a
Tony Hawk every year.
They would alternate Halo, Gears, Call of Duty, and Doom.
Yes. I think you go to a 3-year model where you're giving each of your teams that is working on your three big, you know, action shooter games time to do it. Like,
yeah,
it has to be every other year, but like, even if you're giving them 2 years, so it's like every, you know, Halo every 6 years, Call of Duty every 6 years, then there's, it feels like it's special.
What if also you let the six fucking studios that make Call of Duty, let some of them do some passion projects? That's the thing, is like, I don't know why we would assume Microsoft is like this great, like,
well, you know, again,
benevolence.
Well, it's not necessarily when Microsoft is. The alternative is that we knew what Activision was doing.
Sure.
So the alternative is like Microsoft does not need Call of Duty every year. Activision did. So there's a better chance that like it may not be crashing. May not be crashing. May not be Spyro. But there are options now for them to like Toy for Bob. Vicarious Visions no longer needs to just be Call of Duty support studios. You can leave that to the sledgehammer. You can leave that to I forget who else makes them.
Game. It's at High Moon back to Transformers games.
Yeah.
Bring
back Vicarious Visions and fucking make Tony Hawk. What the fuck, dude?
Well, I don't think you own Tony Hawk because that's a brand. It's like you wouldn't like if you buy I don't know if you we buy own. Sony. If you buy Sony, you're not going to get MLB because MLB it's a separate contract you can negotiate with him. I'm sure he's not going to say no, but it's not like. It's not like Tony Hawk is a brand that actually owns. Well,
to like your previous point, though, we knew what they were doing with, for whatever reason, I don't know why, because Tony Hawk Pro Skater 1 and 2 was a success. They like fucking made that studio a support team on, I don't know what the fuck, like
Call of Duty.
Yeah, Duty. instead of like, you know, I'm sure the budget for Tony Hawk was not that huge outside of the licensing of the music, and it's like.
But again, it's an ROI. It's like, if is it is it,
it did good
it didn't do as well as call as like if I spend $5,000 in the studio on Call of Duty, I get much more money back than I get if I spend
$5,000.
Are they like they're putting Vicarious Visions on like Warzone support or whatever,
yes,
and they're pumping out content, you know, operator skins.
Then you have the games
that you also have to do that for. So like, yes, a lot of them were just like support studios for DLC. I think Raven
is too. Yep,
they were doing it. Yeah, I think they were doing patches for Warzone, and that's why I think they're on strike or were on strike since November. So that is another one where it's like a lot of people who have just kind of been QA for Call of Duty. And again, it's because like I forget what it is, but Warzone has done really well for them. And as much as you may want, like your Spyro or your Crash, I mean, Crash didn't do too well.
Which Crash is not sucks. They should kill Crash.
Didn't you just ask for a Crash back?
No, I was saying a hypothetical. Like,
hypothetically, if Jeff wanted another bad game.
No, my point is that like I would like to see Microsoft do a new Banjo. They've had that for fucking ever, and they won't do anything with it. You know?
I think some of the problem with that, Jeff, is that Microsoft lets their developers do whatever the hell they want, and it doesn't seem like Rare wanted to do Banjo.
I don't know.
You'd also have to
figure what happened with Rare, dude, because like changed 1,000,000% once they got acquired by them. Like,
I was also going to say that a lot of people did not stick around Rare when they got bought.
But then you look at Sea of Thieves, and it had like that Rare charm to it. It maybe was not like the game you would want from Rare or whatever, but like it looked like a Rare game. Like it kind of sounded like it. Like I don't know. It's like,
and I would say the same thing for Grab by Gooies, but. That did not sell to anybody, so it happens. It's, I mean, like you know, you say it is what it is. It's not like they didn't release the Banjo-Kazooie game. It's just not the one people wanted. But they
still need to bring that back. Like I think people would, you know, 3D platforming fans would buy that.
What Banjo?
Both Banjo 4 or Banjo? Don't pick 4. Banjo 3. Whatever.
Well, Banjo 3. But that's in that. I'm not saying that people wouldn't. I'm just saying that part of it's business and part of it is just like they tried
successful.
They tried something different with Banjo and people didn't take to it.
Yeah, but don't try something different. Never do something different.
But that's exactly people want different. Like if you were on Banjo, I don't know, 15, you'd be complaining that Rare should be doing something else. Why waste them on this one property?
Saying that with you know Mario, I like give me more Mario.
Mario's a different beast because, I mean, there's already been, what, 4 or 5 3D platforms?
Give me more Sonic. Give me all of that.
Okay, nobody's saying that.
I mean, let's talk about Sonic.
Not even Sega team saying that. But
I'm super excited for Sonic, guys.
But circling back, like, I don't know, like, this kind of, you brought it up, Jeff, like, Disney bought Fox and, like, are they going to do anything with that? Like,
no.
Is this stuff that Microsoft bought, is it just going to, like, rot? And, I mean, a lot of times with consolidations like this, lots of people end up losing their jobs. Like,
yeah. Because
we don't need 27 studios, right? Like,
if you're not doing Call of Duty every year, you don't need as many QA people for Call of Duty. And if not, I'm sure some of these Activision studios probably overlap with some of these Microsoft studios in terms of like locations where it's like, oh, we can just kind of combine these two for one team. And that's another thing that also sucks, because not only will it take people out of a job, but it's also one less option for people if they want to move on. Like, I think there was a story that was kind of funny this week where somebody had just left Microsoft to go to Activision. And
Rod Ferguson.
What's that?
Yeah, he did. Like, he left the coalition to go join the Diablo team.
Yep.
And now you're right back where you were. And I mean, I assume like
I hate that theory. Like, there are so many game studios that get founded all the time. Like, if somebody it's easy to move away.
But yeah, I'm not worried about the individual people. You could crush their hopes and dreams.
Oh no, but I am, because like all those studios get formed. That does not mean you have the money to hire. Like, yes, like Rob Ferguson, if he wanted to, he would be fine. Somebody would pick him up. Somebody would give him money to start a new studio. But if you're just like, I don't know, a Debbie the Third, that doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be able to like go through the industry as much, or you're not going to find a position that you had that you worked your way up through in Activision over. And again, that's not to say that, I mean we spent the last year talking about how terrible Activision business model is, so I'm not going to be here like, oh man, I hope people get to work at Activision. It seems like for the positive, Microsoft will change their culture, and I'm assuming like there's going to be a lot of bad actors who get the boot at the same time. A lot of people, hopefully, let's go with that.
Yeah, I think Tony, you saw a Wall Street Journal report saying that like basically once the acquisition's over, Kotick's gone.
Yeah,
yeah,
not in a good way though. Like in a like I'm going to make millions and millions of dollars type way.
So I guess like his contract kind of leaked out, or I guess a scale for his compensation leaked out, which I guess if they're a public company, that has to be out there.
Yep.
Anyway, he was going to make out regardless.
Yep.
Like, he's going to make out to the tune of like 60 million more because they were bought out. Yep. But even if he was fired for cause, he was walking away with $250 million.
Which is what I don't get. Like, why not just leave at that point? You still get the money.
Because now he can shepherd the sale and leave with $300 million.
Oh no, I meant like before, because like he was like trying to buy studio, yeah, you could have just left, and like some of that bad news would have like it would have like haunted him. But like you could retire. It's a golden parachute, no matter how you cut it.
Yeah, but he doesn't care about the money. It's more like scorekeeping at this point. It's not.
And I do think some people, yeah, like that's very much what it is, Tony, right? Like the money doesn't mean shit to him anymore. But I do think some people just don't understand like how contracts work. And
no, that's why I was weird when people are like, oh man, he's staying. I'm like, yeah, like, but what you're going to see is like once the merge is over, he's either going to be forced out or they're going to like gently tell him to resign. But people are like, oh, I can't be like, yeah, that's not how it works. The weird thing to me, the thing that always bugs me is like most people have jobs. You know how your job operates, but somehow you never know how to apply that to actual situations in the real world. Like your boss does not just get fired one day, as much as I'm sure people would want that to happen.
I like my boss.
No, don't fire my boss.
Nice.
I like my supervisor and I like my boss, but I'm also around for the board meetings every year to know that like, there's an annual review and it's like the board has to vote, do we keep her? It's not a, and I mean, they can call that meeting whenever, but it's not like they can just get up one morning like, oh, we got three complaints, you're out. It's like you have to have a formal vote and you have to convince the majority. Our board is 35 people, so you'd have to convince like 22, 23 of them that this is enough reason to kind of create this massive disturbance. And I don't know, like some, like even if he won't, I'm surprised that people are like, people, especially when sometimes it's the press reporting on it. Like, I feel like they really should give context to people for them to better understand.
Yeah. Especially when it comes to people like Bobby Kotick, who are, you know, their contracts are complex. There is no I know people were angry. They want him to be fired and not get anything for it.
Yes.
It was never
that was never going to happen.
That was never an option.
Yeah. Yes, he would have left with disgrace, but it would have come up that he got like $250 million to go away. Because, I mean, for better or worse, he is the president of the most successful third-party company in gaming. I assume his contract has expired many times and he has negotiated some really sweet perks for himself.
Yes. I mean, some might say the sweetest of perks. Like, if you're leaving with $250 million, you are...
I don't even know what you do with that money.
I'd love to find out.
You'd probably become evil, Jeff. Like everybody else that has that amount of money.
Lots of cocaine.
Or you die of a giant drug overdose.
You just do a little bit at a time, but you just have a lot of it.
You wouldn't have like a giant mound like Scarface.
Well, you have that giant bowl that whenever you walk by, you just do a little, you know. It's like, it's you know how like, you have like a bowl of candy or something? Like, you're not eating the bowl of candy. It's there.
you have more control with that bowl of candy than I do.
Yeah, that candy bowl would be gone.
Well, I don't recommend cocaine, then, guys.
Thank you for that. I will. No. I will try to stick to that. Okay, look okay for this guy.
Yeah, I can just have a little bit, like just a little taste. You know, like, I have like one Coca-Cola.
I have one cocaine, please, mister.
I think this week, today, I had a Coca-Cola, like the drink. And that's like probably, awesome, you know.
You said Coca-Cola, I mean.
Yes, Coca-Cola, the drink, the product, the drink. But it's like the last one I had, I couldn't tell you one. You know, weeks, a month, you know what I mean? Like, it's like a little treat.
Okay. I guess one other thing here.
Get to the fucking side.
I guess one other thing from here is I saw a lot of people. I mean, it happens. It happened with Bethesda, and it's now happening again with Activision, where fans and, you know, even some press people are like, how does Sony respond? Who are they going to buy? Because they have to answer, right? Like, one, Sony does not have the amount of money that Microsoft has.
No, they never have.
Like, if Microsoft wanted, they could buy Sony outright. Like, they could just buy them.
I mean, I think that would be up for a monopoly clause.
Yes. Like
I said before, if you own any of the three competitors, Nintendo, Microsoft, or Sony, you are way past 50% of the industry.
Yes, yes. But I mean, like, in terms of cash on hand and the amount of, you know, capital they have, they are, like, way bigger than Sony. And if they really wanted to, like, They have that money. They could purchase them outright. Wouldn't get past regulatory boards, but...
But the only reason I think this is different is that the two things is that, one, this has done a massive number. I haven't checked today, but I know yesterday Sony stock was down 17% with this news. Because, like, even though they don't have the money to compete with Microsoft, their gaming division is a big part of Sony's actual...
Oh yeah, revenue, sir. It's I think it is their biggest revenue maker right now.
The other thing is that, like, I think it's one thing when it's us or, and I don't think any of us have ever encouraged that, but it's the difference when it's us and like gaming press and gamers on Twitter and stuff like that versus, like, I think this was picked up in Reuters and I think MSNBC had similar talking points. It's like, what does Sony do next? Because it is, like, it's not Microsoft buying Activision for people. It's Microsoft buying Call of Duty. And I think that it's one of those things where it's like, now they need to respond with a massive purchase. And honestly speaking, nobody comparable. Like, you can buy EA, but you run into the same issue where most of EA's brands are. You'd have to negotiate with it. You could, I mean, Sony can negotiate with the NFL and the NBA right now if they wanted to. And yeah, like, I mean, people always go like Square or Capcom, which is like, yeah, that's nifty, but it also doesn't do anything for you. Like, yeah, they got Final Fantasy.
Exclusive content, you know, I don't know.
No, it's exclusive content. But
you scoop up Resident Evil, you're going to make me buy your system to play it on. You know,
yeah, but that's not a mainstream needle mover. Like,
not like Call of Duty, I guess. But, yeah,
Resident Evil is what, like 8, 10 million copies every 4 years?
Yeah.
Where Call of Duty is 15 million every year.
If you
want
to make some moves, there you go. Like, I don't know. I don't know why Sony has to respond or whatever.
Because, again, if you're in a competition and the other competition is running apps around you, people are going to expect you to pick up.
But, you know, PS5 is more popular. Like,
again, I think we had this conversation last week. That's not even necessarily true. I mean, again, a lot of it is based off of demand, I mean, supply, but like the Xbox outsold the PlayStation 5 in both the November and December months in the States. Again, a lot of it is like you've just been able to make more Xbox
availability. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's like one of those things. I mean, you're using North America, Japan to Nintendo. They're like back and forth in the UK. It's not like they necessarily have a dominant position. Like you could say like, it's selling out, and it is. Like several sites went up today, and I saw that right away. You can say that, but ultimately your sales are still not necessary. Like they can't even say that they're outpacing the PS4 at the same point in time anymore, because that's not true. So at some point, the momentum shifts. When some of that, like it's not one story. It's like, okay, Microsoft is getting aggressive. They're getting active, and they got Bethesda, and now they're outselling Sony. The story then shifts very differently on how people report on it. It's now Sony's on the defense. What are they going to do?
Yeah, and honestly, I mean, I hope they don't go and like reactionarily buy Square or Capcom or
stay away from my Capcom.
Konami or whatever.
Konami's such a weird one because that's another one that comes up, and I know people want like Metal Gear or something like that, but Konami makes so much more money outside of video games.
Right. Well, it's the same with Sega, right? Like they're basically, yeah.
Yeah.
They make money on gambling.
And I think...
On casino machines, like slots and stuff?
Yeah.
I forget what exactly Pacino is, but yeah, it's something that... and yeah, it's one of those things where like, I mean, if I was to pick one of the two, I'd go with Sega. They have more IPs. Like I feel like Konami has Castlevania. They have Metal Gear. And I think those are kind of their big.
I want Nintendo to buy Sega.
Yeah. And the gamers like look at it and go, oh, I want Silent Hill. I want Metal Gear. And like Metal Gear is big. There's no denying that. But like Silent Hill's not huge. Like it's huge in the insular gaming community. But it's not Resident Evil huge.
It's
it's a niche. It's
a niche of a niche, you know. This is a great example. You and I both love Resident Evil. And I'm like, Silent Hill's okay. Like, you would never get me to buy a system for that. Like,
right.
Yeah. And it's not a bad thing to have games. And not every game needs to sell systems. I mean, like example, Metroid, not necessarily a system seller, but it's nice to have in your lineup. And I think that would be good for Silent Hill, whatever. There's an audience. But a lot of that, again, the point that's always the issue with Sony that everybody brings up, is like most of their franchises are already associated with that system. Like if a new Silent Hill came out, even if it came out multi-platform, I'm assuming the sales would still be split something like 70-30 in favor of PlayStation.
Right. If you're a Final Fantasy fan, you buy a PlayStation. You don't buy an Xbox and go, I can't wait for it to show up there. Like, it may or may not ever show up there.
Yeah, like, I don't know. I don't know many people who are holding out on... I mean, Final Fantasy 16 may come over, but it's going to be, I think, almost 2 years since Final Fantasy 7 R came out, and there's not been a word of an Xbox port.
Right.
Not even, like, a hint of it.
It just seems like... I mean, the word behind the scenes is that like Sony just keeps buying extra exclusivity,
which is which is fine. I mean, yeah, and maybe they will get Square, but again, it's like, somebody pointed out, like, you get it for Final Fantasy, you kind of lose out on a lot of other interesting Square stuff. Like, I mean, look at the stuff, like, it may not be for all of us, but, like, the stuff they put out with Nintendo, Bravely Default, Octopath, Project Triangle. Right.
Yeah, like, you're losing a lot there. It looks like, is Sony going to invest in those, like, little, I mean, they're not little games, but they're, like, little kind of sub games. Like, people aren't, like, super hyped for Octopath or Project Triangle, but people will play them.
Yes. And it's one of those things where, again, it's like, yeah, like, those games may still exist, if so, but, like, people are going to be like, oh, why are you wasting this resource on not another Final Fantasy? And if not Final Fantasy, I'm sure it's going to be like, oh, you know, like, they need to put those resources into rebooting Chrono Trigger or some other. And again, that's what happens. I mean, because you buy a studio, you buy things for usually two reasons: manpower or IPs. And if you're buying them and you're doing a bunch of new IPs, I don't think Sony necessarily needs the manpower. They released enough games. Well, not last year, but in general, they have enough games. And they have, like, big games coming out this year. Horizon's in a few weeks. God of War's announced. You know, we have word of, like, another Insomniac is doing Spider-Man and Wolverine.
So they have Gran Turismo's in March. Like, yeah. their teams are releasing stuff.
Yes. So then it's the IPs, and then it gets to a point where it's like, you're buying a studio that's already providing you those same IPs for a little extra cash, and then you have to manage them and any of their other pet projects.
And we know how Sony does with pet projects.
So,
I don't know. We will see how this goes. We'll see the positives and negatives of it over probably the next 5-10 years. Probably won't see any ultimate impact on our gaming until this merger's done. That seemed to be how it worked with Bethesda. Like, once the merger happened, once the acquisition was finalized, what was it, like, the next day or that day, they were like, and here's all these Bethesda games on Game Pass.
Yeah, but we're still in a way waiting for things. Like, isn't that Deathloop? Like, we're waiting for that because of that.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. Deathloop. And
it's like, you gotta wait for all this shit to shake out. Like, the.
But, yeah, like, you're waiting for it, but you know that it's coming out.
Yeah.
I'll check like, it out.
Deathloop.
Was it Ghostwire Tokyo, which is from Tango, which is a Bethesda studio, which is now a Microsoft studio? That's PlayStation exclusive, at least for, you know, 6 months to a year, when that comes out. So, yeah. They have to abide by any of the contracts. Call of Duty probably has pretty deep contracts with, they just re-signed with PlayStation not too long ago. So I don't think that'll disappear. But I'm sure we'll see it on Game Pass when they are finally in control. All right, you guys want to do top tens here?
Sure, why not?
God.
Heck of a transition.
Are we gonna fucking spend 80 minutes on each one here? Let's go.
Oh, get to this. Super, Jeff, give us your number 10.
My number 10 is Metroid Dread.
Was not expecting that to be on
the list. Yeah, on the list at all. Yeah, but, you know.
But Nintendo owns your soul, so you
can't. Yeah, you'll see. It, you know, I don't like it. It's not my favorite Metroid.
Great way to start. Great way to start the game number 10.
Look, it's still like, I do think that it's, again, I think it's a not great Metroid game, but it's still Metroid, right? And it still has that Metroid aesthetic, like that music, the look.
I think the music and the look is great. I wish I liked playing it more.
Yeah, me too. And, you know, it's still fun running around in a 2D environment exploring when you get to explore. I really hope that they come out with an easy mode for it. I did see a rumor. Who knows if that ever becomes true. I think I would like it more if it had an easy mode. I think it's a little too hard. Again, like, Metroid, like, this should be my number one. So that's because of all their design choices, it makes it go all the way to number 10 on my list. And I guess I'll leave it at that, but surprise!
All right, Earl? I'm just going to keep mine short and simple. My number 10 is Mario Party Superstars. Honestly, I just was trying to... I'm like, it's hard not to put it on my list. I had a ton of fun with it. Like I said, I just enjoyed it. It has online, and I've been able to play with friends. Yeah, so Mario Party Superstars.
I had three versions of my list. The original version, it was my number 10. It's good. They did good.
The Mario Party game. My number 10 is Fantasian. It is the Mistwalker RPG on iOS by Sakaguchi. It's very Final Fantasy inspired. It's a great game. I hope that it does make the shift off of Apple, out of the Apple Arcade, onto actual consoles or PC at some point. Normally those deals are about a year long, so maybe we'll see it this year, because I think people will really get into it. It is very much a like a PlayStation era Final Fantasy type game. So, Tony?
Number 10 is The Grand Tactician, The American Civil War.
I'm off right there. Cut his mic.
Why? Why? It's a total war game. It's a Civil War. Come on.
Fucking title.
Awesome. It's awesome. Anyways, the title sucks. I will admit. I'm not really sure why they called it The Grand Tactician. But,
it sounds like a Tony game.
It is. It is absolutely a Tony game. It's on Tony's list.
Civil War,
Total War game. Pretty awesome. Could really use the budget that a Total War game gets, because there's definitely a lot of rough edges to it. But it is fun, and there aren't any other games out there like it about the Civil War. So I enjoy it.
Can you say the title of that one more time? Because it was very long.
The Grand Tactician.
Oh, that was it? That was...
Yes. Okay. I mean, there's more to the title, but you can leave it there.
It's fine. Okay, well...
There's not like another Grand Tactician game that it's going to get mixed up with.
Fair enough. I'm having trouble spelling today. I just wrote down Jeff's as Metroid Droid.
Hey, keep drinking with me.
Jeff, what is your number 9?
My number 9 is Bowser's Fury. I kind of discussed it last week. It's just, it's short for a 3D Mario, but it's also interesting seeing them try like a new version of a 3D Mario. Like how Nintendo keeps trying to reinvent what a 3D Mario is. I don't know if this one will stick, and I doubt it'll be the way going forward. I bet we'll get an Odyssey 2, but this was a cool little like diversion.
Nice. Earl?
I'm going to need Jeff for this one. Let's go cruising.
Cruising! Yeah.
Well, yeah, Cruising Fast, it's in the name. It's just a really fun throwback to arcade racers that I picked up, not on a whim, because it was cheap. But I've had I don't want to say fast, that's just a cheap pun.
You could have said it, though.
Hey, I could have appropriately named it.
But yes, it's a ton of fun. I like how kind of fast and short it is. So it could wear out its welcome if you were doing apps and stuff like that. But the fact that it's pretty much just a straight shot and having you use like your boost and your blast mode and just trying to find the best way to like drift down a course in like, I don't know, less than a minute. And the set pieces are really great. It's just really fun game. I think if you can find it for $20-25, totally worth it. I think any more than that's kind of hard to ask for. But yeah.
Definitely. If you get it for $20-25, it's fantastic.
It's a short arcade racer, so I hear what you're saying about the price and stuff, but I think it's really great. We're gonna talk about it a little bit more tonight, so.
All right. My number 9 is the Dark Pictures Anthology House of Ashes. It is the third Dark Pictures game. It's the latest game from Supermassive. I think it's their best one since Until Dawn. Great writing, some solid action, good kind of quick time events in there. It's a great adventure game with some excellent characters. Tony, you got it at 9.
At 9, I have, you'll be shocked to hear, a strategy game, Total War Rome Remastered. probably my most played game of all time, brought back in a modern way so that it actually looks good, with some really cool changes that make it worth playing through again, and really show that a game that came out in like 2003 is still playable now, especially with all the developments you've seen in strategy games, really speaks to how great that game was and still is.
Yeah, if you know, great games are replayable, so they had some great design in it almost 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Now they made it look pretty, so.
That's right.
Jeff, what do you got at 8?
Number 8 for my boy Sean. Monster Hunter Rise.
Valheim. Wait, no.
No, there'll be no Valheiming.
Farming simulating.
No, I'll never even try that. Are you fucking crazy?
I mean, I'm sure he'll be happy with Monster Hunter Rise then.
So, yeah, Monster Hunter Rise, it's Monster Hunter, but kind of a few impressive things. Like, one, I think it was all one kind of world instead of, like, loading into different zones like it usually is. Just pretty cool that they got that done on Switch I don't think they even did that on the Xbox One that was a few years back.
You load it in.
So that's pretty impressive, and it still like looks pretty damn good, especially for on Switch. And then they added a fucking like grappling hook thingy, and it's Monster Hunter. It's really fun. Like if you play these games, it'll be no surprise that it'd make it to your top 10. I think Sean gave it his number one, maybe.
Quick question on it: when you say it's like it's all together, does that like include like your base hub or whatever? Or you just like wander around into the world, and
I don't think so.
I think the base hub is still its own thing. You take missions for. I do own the game. I played the demo, I remember that was how it did.
Okay, so then you like load into the biome, and then
chase like sometimes a dinosaur or whatever the fuck would like run into another zone. You like chase it down. It's like
right.
Well, here it's like continuous. There's no like, you know. There's no little load screen at all.
I think World did do that, but
maybe. I don't know. But the fact that they were able to do it on the Switch is pretty cool. And I think that, you know, as we'll see with other games we'll talk about on this list, like grappling hook adds a lot to a game. And like just the feeling of mobility, you know?
Grappling hooks the year of 2021.
Hell yeah. I mean, bring them every year and put them in more games.
Earl, what do you got at 8?
I think I might have enjoyed this more than you folks have. But Dungeons & Dragons Dark Alliance.
Nice. I was not expecting that.
We loved it. I loved it.
I liked it. It did not make my list, but yes.
I've had a ton of fun with it. We are nearing the end of it now. And I think I'll give the same caveat that I gave last year, that a lot of this is also just dependent on these were games I'm playing with friends, and it's nice to just have those experiences. And I think it works much better as I could see it being frustrating or annoying if you're playing by yourself. But we play 3-player co-op, and it's really fun. Like the different bosses and abilities and levels and stuff like that. And like the characters, I think, are distinctive enough. Like we each have our own roles and stuff like that. I think sometimes with some of these games, like you just kind of feel like these characters are just different shades of the same thing. Where here, it's like very distinctively, like this person's the tank, this person is the distance, and this person's like the mage or whatever. So yeah, Dungeons and Dragons Dark Alliance.
I love that one of us put that on our top 10 because I think that game is severely underrated. Sucks. Dude, that game is severely underrated.
I played the reviews, it sucks.
Reviews of the game look at surface things, dude. Oh, like, you know, you're clipping into a box or whatever. It's like, but are you having fun? Do you have friends?
I had so much fun with that game, I forgot to put it on my list of games.
Tony, it's because you didn't play it with us.
Did you play with anybody, though? Like, I think Earl's right. Like, if you play by yourself, it is a little bit frustrating.
I'm just saying, like, any game you play with, like, friends is fun by default.
Yes, which is why I added that caveat that, I could see how it would be frustrating on your own or even with two people. Because, like, there are, some of these enemies are just, like, they have giant one-hit KOs. And stuff like that. Or like, if you don't have the bunch of people to kind of have different focuses on, it could get overwhelmed with the hordes. But like being able to kind of divvy it up and having people who can kind of hit run and go and stuff like that.
I do think if you look at it from, it was not a full priced game. Like it was
on Game Pass too.
and it was on Game Pass. I thought they delivered.
The other thing I think is that because it seems like, and this will go into with another game on my list later on, is that I also think because I played it after the fact, like some of the bugs and stuff had been ironed out. So it wasn't as frustrating an experience for me.
The negative reviews focused on all that. They weren't talking about like what was wrong with the core design, which is not much. It was a fun like run through a dungeon type thing. Like,
yeah,
I don't know.
I mean, like it was there were goofy bugs. I remember we were playing together, Jeff, where anytime we finish a mission, it would just boot us out. We had to quit each time.
Yeah, that's annoying.
And rejoin, but yeah,
and you maybe dock it a little bit for that, but it's also. I was happy to have that game. Like it was good. You know?
It hit at the right time, I think, for us. So I liked it. I also like those characters. Like I read the books because they're based on actual
characters,
Forgotten Realms characters. So all right, my number eight is Resident Evil Village.
Way too low.
I'm sure we're going to talk about it more. So I won't say. I like it. It's a very good Resident Evil game. It kind of gets back to a little bit more of the goofiness that Resident Evil can do. While still providing some very good, frightening imagery. So, Tony, what do you have at eight?
At eight, I have another strategy game. Surprise, surprise. Actually, it's not a game as much as it's an expansion. It's the Mythos expansion to Troy, A Total War Saga, which was a disappointing game that came out last year. But when they added this expansion and took a very rich mythological universe and actually added mythological creatures, made it a lot more fun. The quests to get like the ultimate creatures into your armies were quite compelling. Really drew you into a really, really cool Total War world. I think it finally made a game that was actually, free on the Epic Store at launch into a game that was really, really worth playing.
Total War pulling in 8 and 9 for you there.
Yeah.
Jeff, what do you got at 7?
My number 7 is New Pokemon Snap. I like that.
Snapping. Not one I was expecting either.
When this game came out in April, it was my favorite game I had played in the year so far. I don't know. I really like photography systems in games. Like, it's one of the things that drew me to the first Dead Rising. I love like the idea of. Like you take a picture and you get scored on, how well you framed it and, composed the shot or whatever, that's the entire pretty much game of New Pokemon Snap. It's like giving you that, like the neat thing about Pokemon, which is finding new Pokemon and, turning that into a photography game. That is the first one we've gotten in 20 plus years. So and it's a really good version of that. It's not going to last you forever. I'd say, if you can, wait for a sale, but if any of that sounds appealing to you, New Pokemon Snap is really good.
Jeff, you should try out Paparazzi and let us know.
Paparazzi.
Paparazzi, yeah.
It's on Game Pass, and it sounds like Pokemon Snap
right up my alley.
For puppies. Earl, what do you have at 7?
Number 7, a game I think some of you are familiar with. Again, same caveat. It's not a great. It's broken in some ways, but I had fun with it. Back for Blood. I think I'm favorite folks. And that was a very telling. Oh, But yes, it's broken and it has some difficulty spikes, but I've had fun with it. I've played with you folks. I've played with two other groups of friends. It harkens back to the Day of Death for Dead. Some of it is not, most of it's not nearly as good, but it's still an enjoyable romp with people. So
yeah, we should try and finish that at some point.
Yeah, we should. We need to get to the end of that. I feel like.
Let's see. My number seven is Centipede Recharged. Talked about it a little bit last week.
I need to try this, man.
Huh?
I need to try this. Every time you bring it up, I'm like, I should try it.
I need to try
this whole Recharged series.
Yeah, I need to play the rest of them. I think they just saw that Breakout will be coming very shortly.
Ooh.
Yeah, Asteroids is out there, Black Widow Recharged, and if you you have a phone or a PC, Missile Command as well. But Centipede was the first one I tried. It scratches that itch of old school kind of arcade score chasing. I never really loved Centipede. Not sure I still really love Centipede, but I liked what this game did. There's really cool challenges that they've set up, so it's not just like go get the score. There's like, you know, do different things in these or do it in a certain amount of time and you'll pass the challenge. So there's a little bit more game to it than just an old school arcade game. And the soundtrack is phenomenal. So Tony, what do you got at seven?
So at seven, I have a game that I actually made fun of a couple weeks ago, because I keep playing it and I can't stop playing it. NBA 2K22. It's hilarious that a game like you take NBA basketball and you make it into like this weird open world RPG where you're like getting quests from the game where he makes you jogging around the around the city and like makes you go out and get him coffee, but for some reason, goddamn, it works. It's so amusing how the game actually finally makes you feel like you're a basketball player in a world that's bigger than basketball. Like you have to manage your sponsorships, you have to like figure out what else you want to do with your life that's not basketball. It's just kind of cool, and the basketball itself in the game is, I mean, phenomenal. It's the best basketball that 2K has managed to put on a console ever. So it just hits so many different high points. Although I am not getting coffee for the game, I'm never doing that again. I don't care what you make me do.
It's just not happening. Well, I'm glad you've turned around a little bit. A lot, actually.
A lot. Quite a bit.
Jeff, what do you have at six?
My number six is Cruisin' Blast.
And come on, man, it's cute.
God, my ears.
The bright side is that after you hit a song.
I doubt it.
I don't know. Yeah, we already kind of talked about it a little bit, and I don't have a ton to add. Again, it's a short arcade racer. I really love seeing like an arcade racer like that executed exactly how I, when I say the words arcade racer, like how I picture it in my head, this is what it is. It's just like 90s as fuck, like very like it's, you know, it's an ode to that era.
It's a game that like you could see yourself going into an arcade,
yeah,
and putting a token in and actually playing.
Yeah, and I actually
there it is an arcade.
It is that, but
I have played this one in the arcade too.
But it adds a crap ton of content.
Yeah, like it really, yeah, it does. It has a lot. Like I forgot how many tracks like the arcade version is, but like
it's probably only five, I think. Yeah. Cause they're in the game.
Yeah, and you know, so way more here. I mean, they're kind of like remixed versions of it, but it doesn't matter, dude. It's exactly what you think in your head when you think of going to an arcade and playing a 90s arcade racer. It has that 90s aesthetic down. Music with everything, super over the top, just like, you know, you're getting crazy air, and just when you think you're gonna hit the ground fucking crumbles below you and you fall another 200 feet. I love that. Like, that's just my thing. The unlocking of different vehicles that are all like these crazy fantasy. Well, you have like unicorns. You also have like fire trucks. Like you get to, if you want to race, you can
as a
fire truck. Yeah, like it's just it's totally my type of racer. Again, not a lot of meat to the bone here, but what's there is really, really good. I think this game is almost underrated in a way. Like I think it's really fantastic for what it is.
I think what hurts it was that it came out around the same time as Hot Wheels. It's not necessarily a massive market, and he had two kind of brands in the span of, what, 2 or 3 weeks of each other?
Yeah, I just wonder, like, you know, would this game be a bigger hit if it was, like, on Game Pass? You know what I mean? Like,
oh, I'm sure, because, like, that's an easy sell, right? Like,
yeah.
Here's a game. A
couple that, gigs.
Yeah, yeah, like, and something you can jump into and get the feel of it in one or two races.
Yeah, you'll be hooked until you're done, you know, later in the afternoon, but it's fine. It's I don't need a game to be forever.
No, it's a great, and it's something like I will go back to and poke at here and there.
Yeah.
Because it offers like that quick hit. Like arcade racers can do, like, as much as I like something like Burnout Paradise, like, it's not as easy to jump into that as it is Cruisin' Blast.
And it gives you something to go back for, which are these keys that are hidden along the tracks, yep, which you can use to get more vehicles. Which, you know, I still don't have all the vehicles, and I think I'm missing 2 or 3. So, yeah, Cruisin's awesome.
Yep. Earl, what do you have at number 6?
Number 6. I got Crew. No. Curse of the Dead Gods. I think this is like the third or fourth year I've had like a roguelike, even though I don't genre. But there's always like one or two that I find that is just really like I enjoyed it boy enough to play it through several times. And this is, I think we've had this discussion earlier in the year. It's a Hades. It's not as funny or as horny as Hades is, but it is very much kind of that like twin stick action game. And I think the kind of reward that they had here, and like the big twist with this one, is that after like every room you can kind of corrupt yourself more to gain more powers, or you can just kind of go about and not. And yeah, like by the like during some of my runs, I just go full corruption. I'm like, every room, give me as much corruption as you can, and finding ways to stay alive to tackle enemies. It's just really rewarding. And again, it's not as funny or cute or horny as Hades, but I think it's still a really well written game, and it, you know, it gives me Indiana Jones vibe. So yes, number 6 is Curse of the Dead Gods.
Nice. My number 6 is Mass Effect Legendary Edition. Just a great kind of remake, remaster of the original Mass Effect, bundled in with you know, remasters of 2 and 3. It's a great collection, and now on Game Pass, so go play it. Tony?
So I had to put this game on here. Even though I don't think the gameplay is great, I think the storytelling is fantastic. And, of course, the music. Guardians of the Galaxy.
Nice.
What one of the... I can't believe this title launched with as little fanfare as it did, because it's definitely an experience. Like, it's definitely something to behold, and will like pull you in. There weren't that many great, in fact, hardly any great story-based games this year, and this is like the one that I played that I really enjoyed. So, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy.
It is
not better than Mass Effect, Sean. Not better.
It is ironic.
Throw it on the list, and then you throw Sean under the bus. How dare you?
It is. I was gonna say it's ironic because I think part of the reason why it did not have as well as reception is, one, they did not know how to show this case. I think we all made fun of it when it had like that half an hour thing at E3 from Square. But also, like, when you think about it, outside of Spider-Man, like, Avengers was a bust. Yep. Iron Man was a bust. Like, there's no reason to think that this game would have turned out any different. And it seems like, I mean, again, I we'll have the discussion whenever, I guess. It seems like it is the writing and the more than it seems to be the actual gameplay for a lot of people.
Yeah.
because I've been fanning. I've not put enough time to say one way or the other where it would rank on my ass. But yeah, so far mostly all I've been fighting is like jelly creatures, which is not the most exciting thing.
That changes, but yes, okay. It's not. Jelly creatures are not exciting.
I mean, it has some very interesting levels. Some that are just kind of like you walking with somebody.
Yeah.
I mean, that was basically the tutorial too. They're walking with Groot and Rocket, and then you. Then I think the second level was like the prison with you and the daughter.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's a lot of like walking and talking. I was surprised by that.
But those are the best moments of the game, to be frank.
Which
you're just walking around talking to somebody, which, you know, is a movie but not a game.
Yes.
An interactive movie.
Yeah.
Jeff, what do you have at number five?
So my bottom five, you know, through all the different versions of my list, they like things moved around a lot. This top five has pretty much been set in stone since the beginning. And my number five is Mario Golf Super Rush. Super underrated. Like,
oh god, my brain. It just popped right there.
You're welcome. I love golf video games. I tend to lean towards actually the like it's weird because like with art like racers I tend to lean towards arcade, but with golf I tend to lean towards sim. This is not a sim golf game, but it is a very good golf game. Like it does have some depth to it, but it's inviting enough, and it has that like Mario veneer to it that like invites people to play it. Like, so I've gotten, you know, some of my friends who are not super into golf to play this instead of Mario Kart, and that alone is a feat in and of itself.
Like, that's a win for me.
Yeah, and we still do play it, you know, not as much as we did when it came out in what, June or whatever, but we do still play it, and we will still play it. It when it released, I think it got pretty bad reviews overall because there was a lack of content, I think, more than anything. That's been fixed. They've kind of almost doubled the amount of courses. And so, like, you know, now there's not a lot for me to complain about. Like, I actually, this is like a really good game of golf. It's kind of my preferred game of golf now. Like, I'm not going to like bust out my fucking GameCube or my PlayStation 2 to play Tiger Woods 2003. That's a little too much work.
Specific year too, but.
That's my favorite one. That's my favorite. So this is a good go-to modern golf game that I think feels great, and it's like simple enough, but also has enough depth to it, if that makes any sense. I really, really like this game. Like, I really feel like, I guess maybe a lot of reviewers don't like golf games, or was just the lack of content. I don't know, but. It's better than the early reviews were.
Good. Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it.
I love it.
Earl, what do you have at number five?
Okay, so this one was very difficult for me to place because I enjoyed the game, but I think we discussed this last week why I didn't necessarily want it on my list. But it is Super Mario 3D World plus Bowser's Fury. As a package, it's a phenomenal. I love 3D World, and Bowser's Fury is a great addition to it, which is why I put it on this list. But I couldn't put it any higher because, again, as much as I enjoy 3D World, the 85% of the game is a remake from a game of 2013, so it was hard to say. But yes, Bowser's Fury itself is just a really, like Jeff said, a very fun experiment in a 3D Mario game. It actually made me kind of appreciate what they tried to do with Sunshine. And it is also nice to see them try. I mean, like, most 3D Mario games are vastly different. And for them to just go balls to the wall and try something even radically different than what they have 64 Galaxy or 3D World and kind of nail that, I really appreciate that. So, yes, my number five is, it's Bowser's Fury, but it's Super Mario 3D World plus Bowser's Fury.
Nice. My number five is Microsoft Flight Simulator.
Oh, that came out this year.
But yeah, I mean, it came out on PC last year, but this year it came out on the Series X, which is where I put most of my time into it. It's a game, but it's more of like an experience that you kind of where you're flying this plane, and like you can set it up so it's very easy to fly. But it's more about just like finding shit in the world and finding landmarks and flying through cities, or if you're Jeff crashing into stuff.
Oh, Terrorist Trainer 20.
Oh no! Oh no!
They do black it out when you crash into stuff. But yeah, I think that it is as deep as you'd want it to be, and it can also be, you can set it so it is super arcadey and very easy to fly and find stuff. It's really neat. It's not going to be for everyone, but I had a lot of fun with it until I ultimately fell off of it, because it requires a lot of time. But I had a ton of fun with it in that time that I did play. Tony, what do you have at number 5?
This is for Sean, because I just had to put this one right above Guardians of the Galaxy. Mass Effect Legendary Edition. I thought this was probably the best remake of this year. It was a fantastic game to play through again. It's been so long since I played through the original Mass Effect. I mean, it's probably been like 13 years. So it was kind of like experiencing that game all over from the beginning, with like upgrades that made it so much more than like the flawed masterpiece it was at launch. And to get to play through these games like on a current console, like looking like they belong on a current console, it's just fantastic to get through this again.
That felt that fucking elevator ride reduced.
Right. The elevator rides are now like 2 seconds, as opposed to like sitting there waiting for the level.
It really would be like a minute long like ride.
The one part that I find a little disturbing is looking at the maps of the levels and how small they are, like how tiny the areas that we were waiting so long to load, like all those years ago, were actually like, oh, it was 3 rooms. Yeah. It took the game like 2 minutes to load 3 rooms, and then you took the elevator up, and then you got another like 2 rooms on top
of it, and it still wowed us, you know.
Yeah, that's what's crazy, right? Like, you know, a decade ago or 15 years ago, whenever this came out, like we were wowed by the fact that like those 3 rooms are there. Like,
like these rooms
look, you can go to a planet and there's rooms.
But yeah, game's awesome. Excellent thing to re-experience.
Jeff, what do you have at number 4?
Number 4 is a game that I hope you all play someday, and that is Axiom Verge 2. I've gone on and on about this. You know, my short pitch about it is it takes a 2D Metroid game and removes the bosses. And, you know, there's bosses there. You don't have to fight them. It's not about the combat at all. It's all about doing that 2D exploration thing, finding a new item, going, okay, now where can I go on the map? And it's just, that is a huge departure from the original, which was just trying to do Metroid, but also like aesthetically, this just looks different. The music sounds different. I think that, you know, I think his name is Tom Happ that does these games. Like, took a kind of a huge risk going a different route. I guess it didn't pay off for him, but I loved it. Like. People didn't seem to give a shit.
You're screwed.
No, I mean, I don't know how it did. I have no idea how it did. But like, it just like, you know, you could tell when a game is popular on Twitter or whatever.
It definitely seemed like it didn't have the same buzz that the first one had.
Yeah, muted reaction compared to the original. And I think that there's probably a lot of people that played the original that haven't checked this one out yet. I'm telling you, you're missing out. And have an open mind. It's not going to be exactly what Metroid is. I think it's an even cooler take. It like emphasizes what I like about that type of game, whereas Metroid Dread emphasizes the like things that are terrible, like the things that like annoy you and want you like make you want to take a break. This game was just like keep playing and exploring. Like, I don't know, man. I think Axiom Verge 2 is really cool.
Earl, what do you have at number 4?
I'm going to say this, and I'm not going to find any way to justify it other than I had fun with it, my time with it, played it with friends again, I know it's a mess, but I really had a good time with Outriders. So that's number four. Again, buggy as hell, broken in so many ways. It was, but it's like sometimes you have bugs which are frustrating, and then you have bugs that you just have to laugh at because it's like this is messed up and it screws over your game, but you just go with it. I can't tell you how many times I got stuck in the geometry or my gun wouldn't shoot. But it was
for a shooter, that's bad.
Yeah, it is. It's like one of those things where it's like, how do you even come up with a bug where you can't shoot your gun? And you find some way to fix it, some magical way to fix it. But all that said, I had an absolute blast with it. I think, you know, it has a really fun campaign. I think some of the side missions where you're going after bounties of powerful enemies, or you're going after monsters to create like animal lords and stuff like that. I like that part of it. And again, I think I kind of like I was saying with Dark Alliance, I like the fact that your characters get to feel different and you have the ability to just kind of equip all these different powers. And like the powers get fed into you by your gear, so you can wear gear to increase the power, increase the duration, how many times you can do it. And like, again, it just felt great at the end when you just have all these powers and you just kind of like you're syncing up with your friends and like one person's freezing there, another person's blasting them with fire, another person's coming in with a shotgun or something like that. And it just felt really good when the game was working and you were kind of all coalescing on the same thing. So yes, that is why Outriders is my number four.
Nice.
I'm sorry, was Earl talking? Was he talking? I didn't hear any of that. None of it.
Tony's just hating. Tony needs friends to play these games with.
I have friends who I played this game with, and I'm just... Ugh.
Hey, man.
I enjoyed what I played of Outriders.
I have not played it, so I can't speak to it, but whatever. You know, I get liking a cheesy game. Like, it's fine.
I like Outriders. I'm surprised it's so high, though. What was that?
I'm surprised it's so high, though.
I honestly was kind of working backwards, and I was trying to figure out like what games I put in front of it. And I think part of it really for me is what it came down to is I actually do want to go back and kind of check out the DLCs and stuff now too. So it made me think, okay, I really need time with this. So yeah.
Nice. My number four is Forza Horizon 5.
Too low.
Okay. Thanks for letting me know, Jeff. I'm sure we will talk about it again.
But you know, that's coming. Yeah.
I think I've ran into some of the same issues Tony did, where I just played so much of 4 not too long ago that it felt like more Forza Horizon, which isn't bad at all, because it's great, but just felt a little more of the same, which is still fantastic. Just that's why I couldn't place it over the next three I have. Tony, what do you got up for?
Well, I have a very interesting title that you may have heard of. It's called Forza Horizon 5.
It's weird.
I can't say anything other than it's fantastic, awesome looking game. I just played so much of 4 right before it that I'm like, okay, people are talking about how earth shattering this is. I literally just played this. It is the same. It's great. I love it. I love having it again. I love having more of it, but
they added some like nice new things to it, but it didn't feel earth-shatteringly yes. different.
Yes, it's not that different. It literally is not that different.
Yeah. I hear what you guys are saying. I get you, but like to me, just from an objective like
you can talk about it later on your own.
Yeah.
Damn it, okay. Jeff.
I mean, yeah, but
I mean, what? But clearly, Tony and I both like the game a lot.
Yes,
we're all in agreement on it. Yeah. But to me, I just think it's an objectively polished game, like yes, more polished than any other game on my list.
No denying that it is super, super polished. We will talk more about it, I'm sure, shortly. Jeff, what do you have at number three?
Okay, so my number three is Resident Evil Village, which, you know, I think we talked about it over the last 2 weeks a little bit, but it's just, I love it because it's like an homage to like kind of the whole series. you know, like as you're going through the game, like you're like, this section reminds me of this game. You know what I mean? Like I kind of love that about it. And kind of totally different vibes throughout the levels. Like there's like all of a sudden you're in like this weird Frankenstein fucking factory. You know, early on you're in a village with fucking wolves and you're like thinking, oh, this is like Resident Evil 4. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. It just kind of encompasses everything I love about Resident Evil. It was like better. I think it was better than 7. Like it was better than I was expecting it to be. So
nice. I like 7 quite a bit.
I need to replay that one, but like I'm just
torn on which one I think is better.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyways,
great. Earl, what do you have at number 3?
Number 3. Knockout City.
Nice.
Yeah, this one is different. I just had a ton of fun with it. I think I said it last week. It's just honestly speaking, the best compliment I can give it is like it feels like a game I feel like Nintendo would have made. It's just taking the concept of dodgeball and making this really fun 3v3 game out of it, and like it's very, you know, like what they say, simple to pick up, easy to play, hard to master. Like being, you know, like the different types of dodge, the different types of throws, the different types of balls you can pick up. Being able to time, you know, time catches and throw them back or pass between teammates. Being able to use your teammate as a ball, as a last ditch effort. Just all the different strategies that go into it. And it's just it's an utter blast. And I think it also has like one of the, I don't want to say necessarily unique, but I think in gaming, it's a very different type of feel. It's kind of like I think a few games have gone for like their urban a fail to it, but I think this one does it really well. And I just had an auto pass anytime I played this game this year. So Knockout City is my number 3.
Nice. My number 3 is Super Mario 3D World and Bowser's Fury. I don't know. I mean, it's 3D Mario that, you know, the major portion of the game is something we've already played. On the Wii U, but that is a wonderful 3D Mario game. And then Bowser's Fury made me actually like the Sunshine type formula. I really like what they did there. That's a ton of fun. I think we talked a little bit about our issues with it last week, where either Bowser doesn't show up when you need him, or he shows up too often.
Yeah, exactly.
But otherwise, like that game is—it's just a blast to play, and it's a wonderful, wonderful package. I'm glad that it hit the Switch, and people that did not get to play 3D World got to play it, and they got this cool new direction for Mario that we probably won't—it probably won't be the direction it goes in, but who knows? Tony, what do you got?
Tony has Bowser's Fury.
He's just said speeches after you talked about that.
So what? No, like, no, I don't have any of those. Sorry. I have Humankind. One of the blessings of Game Pass, being able to play an awesome strategy game that tries some absolutely new things that really refreshes like the 4X Civilization formula for free. So that's it's kind of good to get into that whole thing. So starting off as a civilization in its infancy, basically picking rocks up the ground, trying to like live by foraging for nuts and berries, and taking that civilization in through a bunch of different eras, where you get to experience not like the one choice you get in a Civ game where you're like, I'm going to be the Romans, you're the Romans forever. But to be able to like evolve through the eras and get like a whole bunch of different experiences and see your civilization grow and in accordance with those experiences. It's really cool. It's just a new experience. For instance, like in a Civ game, you're playing as Japan. Your special unit is the Zero, right? So you get the Zero whenever you actually manage to get to the technologies that you need to have the Zero. Well, in this game, you're going to hit every era. Every era is going to have its own unique unit. You're going to have a unique experience within that era according to the civilization you have. And it's not going to be it's going to be momentary, but then you're going to move on to a new civilization, which has its own unique stats. It's just cool to evolve over time like that. So humankind does some things differently. I think there's some more room for improvement. I look forward to some expansions in the future, but really, really great game.
Those types of games always seem to really come into their own once the expansions hit.
Yeah, yeah. When they realize, like, where are the players exploiting this game? Like, what is missing? What do people want? Like, once they start getting that feedback. But, I mean, it has that really good base that you need to start off with. And that's really what you look for.
And it sounds like they hit the right notes on, like, what you'd want from an evolved type Civ. So,
yeah,
really cool. Jeff, what do you have at number two?
My number two is Forza Horizon 5. Because
never heard of it.
Yeah. It's perfect, you know? Like, it's... Like, on an objective level, like, you know, when you're looking at just, like, the technical, like, it's just one of the best-looking games I've ever seen. It runs perfectly. And it's a complete package, which you can't say about my game of the year. It's like, the whole game isn't there yet. Fucking Forza Horizon 5 comes very complete. You probably easily spend a couple hundred hours in it, you know? I probably spent somewhere between 50 and 70 hours in it, and I had fun the whole time. Like, it's a joy to play too. Like, I don't know. Like, I get what you guys are saying that, like, you've already played that, but even still, like, I just think on an objective standpoint, then that again is better than the other games this year, in my opinion. Except for one for me.
I think we'll be talking more about Forza Horizon when we get to our main list. But I will say, like, what's really cool about it is that everybody can kind of approach it differently.
Yeah.
Like, I just drove around hitting all the roads or trying to get the billboards and, like, hitting the, like, there's leaderboards for everything. So you can pick a focus and just do that. You don't need to go do all the races if you don't want right away or all the jumps right away. Like, you can do whatever you want and they're tracking it and giving you, like, motivation to keep going.
I ignored a lot of that stuff early on, and then as I got very deep into the game, I started to pay attention to that stuff way more, and that became, like, the focus of me playing the game. So I totally get what you're saying, because I went through both. I went through both, like... Yeah. I mean, then there's other things you could be into, too. Like, I really got into... I think these were kind of side things. Big jumps. Like, I didn't notice that until probably 30 hours into the game. Like, just that they had those laying all around where you could see how big of a jump you could get. Like,
yeah. Like, there's so much cool stuff in there. We'll talk about it a little bit later. Earl, what do you got at number two?
I'm just going to say to move on because I don't need you and Jeff to give me crap anymore. It's Metroid Dread.
Oh,
yeah, I respect people liking it. Like, I really do. It's not what I wanted out of it.
Yeah, I will say that I don't think I've ever hit those difficulty spikes the same way that you folks did. And again, I don't mind being shepherded around. I know that part of it is people like the exploration. I'm okay with them kind of giving me... Essentially, what they tend to do is like, here's where you need to go. We're going to block up some paths. You got to figure out how to get there, which makes it more puzzly than exploration, I think, sometimes. But... And sometimes it is very vague, but for the most part, I had a ton of fun with it. I think, and again, and I say this, it reminds me of Other M in the sense that I think it's like between this and Other M, I think they really have kind of settled on like what type of character they want Samus to be, and not just in characterization, but she's a very nimble, but very strong fighter. Like you see it time and time again with a lot of cutscenes of the bosses where she is very quick. She's very agile and she doesn't necessarily need to rely on her blaster. She can go pretty hand to hand with people. And I think one of the ways to do it is that dodge mechanic, which I think granted a lot of enemies have this massive tell, but like you do have like a quick window to react to them sometimes. And I think it's a really fun way to break up the combat. granted, again, sometimes it does break some encounters with a certain characters, like, and I know people hate them, but I mean, there is some joy in, like, the times when you're able to counter the Emmys and get away from them. My one beef with the Emmys is actually not even dealing with them. I don't mind. It's when you have to destroy them, and it means that you basically have to shoot them, because they don't really design a ton of spaces for you to be able to, like, shoot them for 10 seconds or whatever it is consecutively to charge up that beam. But outside of that, a ton of fun with the game.
Glad you liked it. And I have a feeling it'll be, we will find a place for it on our overall top 10. So
I think my biggest beef with the game, more than even them cutting off the exploration, is the, like, how the bosses are, like, parry based, where it's like, you can't just go at them how you'd want to. It's all based on that, you know, the blocking or whatever, like the parrying.
I think I get your point. Like, you can do it the other way sometimes, but it is a lot of a grind.
It is learning, like, this kind of, like, flawless set of moves you have to, like, kind of do. Like, I don't know. It's just not what I think of when I think of that series. I don't know. But anyways, moving along.
Yeah. Glad Earl liked it. And a ton of other people liked it.
I'm not trying to. I'm not trying to bring Earl down for places. It's on my list.
Bring him down.
I'm not trying to, like, you know, rip out his game. I just say, you know, the thing that bugged me about it was that, but I totally get it. I totally get liking the game.
All right. My number two is Ratchet and Clank Rift Apart. I mean, it's a Ratchet and Clank game, so you guys knew it was going to end up on here somewhere. It's an excellent one of those. It is more in line with the future series from PS3 than that remake, reboot, film tie-in that they did on the PS4. It's just really, really good. I don't know if, like, their rhetoric around, oh, we could only do this on a PS5.
That doesn't seem possible.
Okay, you have these really cool rifts, and it does take you into a different area, but those areas are, like, super small. They're not, like, you're not going from this massive Ratchet level into another massive Ratchet level. It's like a mini sub. It's a room, basically. Like, it's an instant loading of a room.
Oh, like something that's been in video games a lot.
Yeah, it's just done. It's just done instantly. Like,
yeah.
And it's neat. Like, it's cool that, like, oh, but, like, it's here. Like, it's,
yeah.
So, like, I'm not sure about the rhetoric behind it, but who cares? Cause, like, it's fun. Those little riffs are, you know, cool. You know, puzzle rooms, and then, like, you can use the rifts where you can kind of, like, teleport yourself across the map, but, like, teleporting's been done too. Like, Dishonored had teleporting, right? Like, that stuff's not new. The concepts they brought here aren't necessarily new. They're just refined really, really well, and it's done, you know, the Insomniac way, where everything looks just phenomenal. They have a handle on Sony's hardware, like few other developers do, between what they do with Spider-Man and Ratchet. So it's an excellent game. If you have a PS5, like, you should definitely give it a shot.
Is there anyone else playing it here?
Nobody else has a PS5 but Tony.
That's right.
Well, Tony, have you played Ratchet?
I own it. My son has played it.
Oh my god.
I haven't actually played it. I'm not into those games.
Chris, if I had a PS5, I would have played Ratchet.
I'm sure. Like, it's not a Tony game. I wasn't, like, expecting him.
Yeah.
I was just, but,
like, I mean, it's a 3D action platformer with goofy weapons that looks like a Pixar film. Like, I know that's, like, you know, very cliche to say, but it is. They're basically kids' games. But,
which is why, like, I own it, because I bought it for my kids. Yeah. Like, it's
whatever, Tony.
I'm not against it. I don't hate it. I just play other stuff.
There's tons of other stuff to play. So if you did not, I mean, anybody else, if you have a PS5, it's probably one of the games you should get, whether it's for your kid or not.
Right.
You should probably play. There wasn't a lot specifically from Sony last year. So Rift Apart was a good one. Tony, what do you have at number two?
I have my strategy game of the year, Old World. It's like the fourth strategy game on my list. It's like all strategy games this year.
It's a lot, yeah. you have five, actually.
Do I have five? I miscounted. Oh, yeah, I do have five. Anyway, it's a great year for strategy games. But this one, similar to Humankind, takes that Civilization 4X formula and, you know, turns it on its head and adds a bunch of stuff to it. In this case, a sort of Crusader Kings-esque family element where you literally have NPCs in your realm who you have to manage and deal with, including your own leader. So you're participating as a leader who can die and be assassinated and have relationships with other leaders and other people within your realm. So it kind of adds that really cool aspect. You also have a limited amount to what you can do because as a leader, you only have finite ability to do things. So like there's orders that you have to issue. And when you run out of orders, you're kind of done. So there's like a management aspect to everything you do where you have to really pay attention to what's going on. I think it's a bit more polished than Humankind was. It knows really what it wants to be, and it's a more complete game, which is why I give it a little bit nudge over Humankind. Even if it's missing like some of the cool elements of Humankind where you could like play as different civilizations as time moves on, but really, really fun. I think that the coolest element is like every king that you have has their own agenda and the things that they want to do in their lifetime. And those are the things that determine victory in the game. Like maybe this one king wants to settle on this continent over there and that's really important to them. And if you can do that, then that moves you one step closer to victory. So you don't have to conquer the world to win the game. You basically just fulfill your king's ambitions. And maybe those ambitions aren't conquest. So that's a really, really nice element that they need to put in a lot of these games. And I think this one does it really, really well. So Old World.
Nice.
Okay. So that is everybody's number two. Before we do the number one.
Do we all have the same number one?
I was just going to ask, do we already have the same number one?
I think this might be, I was going to ask as well, because does everyone have Halo at number one?
I do.
All right. It's a first. It is a first.
That's a first.
We are 12 years into this, and it is the first time we have a consensus number one.
We have given Halo Reach Game of the Year, right? Which was wrong. Which was wrong to do, but
which was right.
This one feels right. I didn't like before I went into playing the game. I was like, I don't know if I would want to if it's good. Even like I'm like I don't know if I'd want to name it that because we already gave Halo like a Halo game. Game of the Year. Like, it really was something that crossed my mind. But I have no hesitations after playing it. It was the most fun game I played, you know, last year. And good enough for me, you know. I'm also a huge fan of, like, a long-established series, like, trying something new, you know. Like, you put anything I love into an open world, I'm going to love that. And I think Halo fit in an open world.
Did you mention the grapple hook already?
He didn't.
No.
Grapple hook. There's a grapple hook.
I know. I mean, you can pretty say awesome. Grapple hook. You know, that's what your 2021 was, grapple hooks.
Yeah. I mean, that was great as well, because in the campaign anyways, like, I just great. Started... It's
great multiplayer, too.
Yeah, but you have to have it. Like, yes. In the campaign, you just have it constantly. And it's like, I was literally just bouncing around rooms... Like I was Batman, fucking just killing people, like bailing them, you know.
It's kind of great that like motion matters more in this game, as opposed to like the tank Master Chief we've always had in the past.
Yeah.
Which I think is where shooters have really gone. Like it's really gone to that speed, moving around, trying to get into position, and I think like. Some of those later levels in the game where you're like in those arenas where you're having to battle lots of enemies and like zipping around, you actually feel powerful. You feel strong. You're like, and it's not just because the game has powered you up. It's not because the game is giving you better armor or whatever. You're like, I have mastered this. I am really good at this. Look how great I am. And how many games can achieve that? Like, I can't think of any. Like, most of the time, it's like, you're really great at this because your stats are huge. And that's not what Halo does. And I think that's an achievement right there.
Yeah. I will say one negative on the grapple hook is that it kind of makes the other equipment useless.
Useless, yeah.
Like, I mean, like, I utilized it, but the grapple hook is the, you know, it's the thing you need.
Yeah.
It's you know, there's a boss fight. It's not the final boss fight, but it is getting very near to the end, where you fight that brute guy. And he has the hammer, and he's kind of chasing you. You have to take down the four cores. And you're in this arena, and like it's how you get away from him.
Like, yeah.
And you have to, because if he hits you with that hammer, you're dead.
Yeah, that's for sure.
So like you have to basically be Spider-Man in these corridors and Doo-doo. Be able to get yourself away from him really quickly. It's really, really, really cool.
I think just real quick, because you've all mentioned Niner campaign, I would just note that like it's the reason that Halo's around 20 years later. It is still one of the best in class multiplayer shooters on the market. And I think that this game is just a really fine reminder of that. I think, again, I think Tony mentioned this, is like, you are good at this game by being good. Like, you can get power weapons and stuff like that, but you can got somebody with a sword with a like really five well-placed pistol shots before they clear that gap. And like, you like the starting weapons, I mean, like, the pistol still remains, like, it's not as OP as it was in the first game. It still remains a really solid weapon, and the fact that you could start off with two weapons, which are pretty deadly, and you get power weapons, and I think they've improved it over time to, like, everybody knows when the power weapons are dropping, everybody knows where the power weapons are, they say it on the map. It's no longer like, oh, I memorized this map, so I know exactly where this sword is going to pop up. Yeah, so we complain about, like, playing with randos and some of the objective-based stuff, but, like, playing on your own and, like, just a 4v4, even solo, and playing with friends, it just reminds you of, like, how tight the shooting is in this game and how, like, well-balanced so many aspects of it is. And it just, I mean, again, we can say all we want about the Battle Pass. Take that away. It's still a really great multiplayer shooter.
I think, honestly, my biggest complaint with multiplayer, though, is it doesn't feel like the maps are complete. Like, the fact that we have to wait till May for any more maps is, like, I'm pretty bored of the maps at this point. There's not that many of them, dude. Like, even if there was like two or three more per mode, like, I don't know. Like,
it's weird because, like, I mean, I think there's like 10 maps total, but two of them or three of them are big team battle maps, so it does feel a little light, you know, compared to other Halos. And yeah, I would like some new maps, and like the, and not coming sure. Until May. I played a ton of this game already, so yeah, I'd like to see a little bit different going on. But
I've kind of stopped playing the multiplayer as much, partly because of that. It's like I've done all this. Okay, I forgot the name of the map, but like you run to the right where all the vehicles are, and then ride them. You know, around the horseshoe to the other side. Like,
I know it's the warehouse one, and that, the factory one. Yeah,
you know what I mean? It's like, I've done this dance a million times. Like,
well, I mean, like, that's right. Like, as you learn the maps, like, you're gonna learn the best tactics to take.
But I mean, it's a double.
It's always fun, but give me more.
Because that is part of multiplayer. It's like you do want players to actually earn the maps and stuff like that. But I also can understand why you would get bored in a variety, since like there's OEX number of maps, and then you have them divided. I think Big Team has like three maps or four.
Yes. I don't play that at all unless we're in a too big a group. Like, I won't on my own go play a Big Team. You
know, and what that's mean? And that's when it's not broken.
I do play quick play like all time on my own.
Yeah, and I like Fiesta. I think Fiesta is just like really again, it's super frustrating because you run into somebody with a rocket launcher when you have a close range weapon or something like that. But
you start out with you get like a pistol and like a plasma pistol, and like he's rolling with a rocket and a hammer.
Yeah, I really hate when they don't. I know it's random, but I hate when it's like you have a sniper and an alien sniper. I'm like, thank you. In case anybody wants to fight me in my face, I'm screwed. So.
I will say, like, at Fiesta is, like, it's been around forever. Like, I remember it being in 3. I just never really got into it. But when they added it here, because, you know, everything was so kind of... You couldn't choose. Like, if you choose quick play, you're going to end up in a random assortment. And there was no Slayer pick originally. So Fiesta is, like, a change of pace match. Like map up, and it's fun. Like,
yeah, I like it.
And it gives you a chance to try some of those weapons that maybe you don't get to pick up because you're not fast enough, or
you wouldn't try. Like, you're like, right. Oh, I don't want to try that. Like,
I'm not going to pick up a regular sniper rifle.
Me too. Yeah, I'm not a sniper, so it's like. But then I get it, and then I fucking no scope somebody. It's like, yeah.
Right, yeah. So it's like, but that's the thing. Like, they give you the sniper. You can end up with, like as Earl said, the sniper or like the alien sniper. And it's like, okay, well, I have to use it now, and I've gotten better. Like, I'm still pretty shit with the Spartan sniper, but like that Stalker rifle, I could do some damage with that now. So, it's fun. It's fun stuff. The game is great.
This is the least contentious game of the year, like top spot.
I mean, we've never had this literally happen before.
Yeah,
we're all just like, it's like, yeah,
we're all just like reveling in how awesome the game was. Like saying our little nitpicks, but we're all just like, yeah, that was a good game. I don't know.
And then we can, you know. I do wish, you know, I had everything that we wanted at launch, but I'm looking forward to like in May or June when they add co-op, but we can jump in and play the campaign together and see how that works. And
that's kind of it. Like, it's kind of left us wanting. It's like, I want more of this.
I'm still very fascinated to see what co-op in this campaign will be. I think you're going to end up breaking the game. I mean, to be fair, Halo co-op is always broken because it's never like I find that out of co-op games not always aren't really suited for 4 players. You can't really scale up between like 2, 3, and 4, so you're trying to aim for like 3. And if you have a full squad of 4, you can just kind of run through most scenarios because there's just enough bodies to distract people.
Right.
And this one's even different because it's open world, and I can't imagine like 4 people with like the shock grapple hook just like stunning bosses and stuff like that.
Oh, it's gonna be so much fun going up against that like the second to last boss, the brute guy with the hammer, because you're gonna be able to like destroy him quickly because he's only gonna be able to pick one of you to go after. That's gonna be fun. Yeah, that game's gonna be broken when we get co-op.
When we were playing through co-op in Halo Reach, like that's broken. It's utterly broken.
Yes, and that was designed around co-op. Yeah. So imagine this one where it's like we're just gonna roll up on enemies and people are gonna be taking selfies as the other 3 murder them. So
I'm just gonna be like sitting there putting grenades in Walt's lap while you guys are doing other things.
Why is Walt dead again, though? I don't know.
I don't know.
He went to drive a forklift.
He's totally forked.
All right, well, that was easy to get the number one slot. We have 9 other slots here. What fits in?
All right, let me throw one thing out.
Yep.
Just early on. It feels important to me. Like, I want Axiom Verge 2 on the list. Like, I know no one's played it.
I think we all have a game like that. Like, I'm like, yeah. I want Old World on the list.
And
like,
I don't care.
Axiom Verge.
I think it's fair. I think Axiom Verge fits. I think Metroid fits.
I think number 2 seems to be Forza Horizon. That was
yes. Number 2 probably has to be Forza Horizon 5.
Okay.
I think it was on that, 3 or 4 years, and it's like top five. So
yeah,
Resident Evil's on the list, obviously.
Yeah,
let's not be hasty.
It's on the list for sure, dude. It's easy top game of the year. Like,
I think Bowser's Fury fits somewhere on there.
Yeah,
three of us named it right.
Mass Effect Legendary Edition, I think, should be somewhere on this list. Probably closer to the top.
Basically, all right. So, it's, Old World,
a re-release, easy.
Axiom, Resident Evil, Ratchet. Earl, is there anything else from your list that you'd like to?
That I would fight for?
Yeah.
No, not really. I mean.
Would you put Knockout City in there?
My list sucks.
No, I mean, I enjoy my list, but I'm not going to fight. I think we had this discussion last week. It's like, there's not a game where Mario's on it, Metroid's on it. I'm fine with those. I would want Knockout City, but like, I'm not going to fight over like Ratchet or...
So I've filled in Halo and Forza. Like, so there's eight more slots.
I've
taken off what we've kind of stated back and forth. Jeff said he wanted Axiom Verge 2. Tony said Old World. I think Metroid belongs there. It's on yours and Jeff's list. I put Ratchet for me. So Knockout City, Mass Effect, Old World, Metroid Dread, Axiom Verge 2, Resident Evil, Ratchet. That's seven games. We need an eighth.
Fuck, put Mario Golf on that bitch.
I think you got your one free game.
Hey, you guys need slots to fill.
What about Cruising at 10?
Yeah, I was going to say, I would fight for Cruising.
Cruising was on a couple lists.
I would fight for Cruising, yeah.
All right. Are we good at that, with that at 10?
Sure.
All right, so how do we fill this in here?
I'll take Axiom at 9. I don't give a shit. No one else has played it.
Okay.
Sold.
I'm not gonna fight that.
Yeah, right. I'm giving you a freebie. Take it.
I mean, I don't care where we put Ratchet, as long as it ends up on the list.
Wow, we've mellowed out in our old age.
We really have. Well, I think the problem was like
it's the top,
like stock at the top, but there's no argument there.
Yeah,
like, all right, let's get my game on the list somewhere.
Well, so happy, throw me a bone and.
Yeah, and like honestly, like I'm perfectly happy with how this goes. Like, you know, my top four games are on here. So I don't have any, like, wherever they place, I don't really care. So,
same as well.
All right. So what do we have left? We have 1 and 2 and 9 and 10. Phil.
One and two and 9 and 10, leaving Knockout City, Mass Effect, Old World, Metroid, Resident Evil, and Ratchet.
I feel Resident Evil should be high. Feels very strongly about the situation.
3, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 11.
I think if Tony played the new Resident Evil, like just going right into it, you'd enjoy it. They're more, I don't know, they're not like clunky like the old ones. I don't know.
What if we do Resident Evil 3, Mass Effect 4, Metroid 5?
I
can live with that.
I think Mass Effect's too high overall, just but I'm not gonna, if we got everything else set in stone.
So I did that based on placement.
Yeah.
Like where Tony has Mass Effect and where I have Mass Effect gives it 11 points. And Resident Evil, where you have it placed and where I have it placed, give it 11 points. So give Resident Evil the edge because you have it higher on your list than Tony and I do with Mass Effect.
Damn, he's breaking it down. All right.
I like it. I like the argument here.
For overall list, I feel like having that, like, you know, kind of a re-release. Whatever. It's not just a re-release, though.
Like, you're making it sound like all they did was, like,
up. Yeah, that's true, but it feels like that's what you reserve for that first game. Yeah.
Not awesome at launch. Like, there were some really cool things about it, but there were some really broken things, and they fixed them all. And they made the game look awesome, and the game is utterly playable and utterly fantastic right now. And I think that's an achievement.
I'll accept this, because I would have said the same things about, like, fucking Tony Hawk. So.
I will put Ratchet at 8. I don't really care. Leaving us with Old World and Knockout City.
Alright, Earl, let's fight.
I will take Knockout City at the higher one, the lower one, whichever.
Yeah.
I'll take it at one of the two slots.
I like that.
Whichever one is chosen at 10. Let's go with that.
Oh, 7. Okay.
There we go. Old.
Alright.
Done. Works for me.
All right, so how's our breakdown?
Cruising Blast at 10. I like that there. I'm glad it made that.
That's awesome.
It made the end. Axiom Verge at 9. Ratchet at 8. Knockout City at 7. Old World at 6, which gets a strategy game on there, which might be a first.
It's not a first. We've had them on there before, but normally it's like at 9 or 10.
At 9 or 10, though. Metroid at 5. Mass Effect at 4, Resident Evil at 3, Forza Horizon at 2, and Halo at 1. And
that's what I'm proud of.
Probably an angry Sean.
I am proud of that.
All right, Sean, Guardians of the Galaxy does not make the top 10. It was only on my list, sorry.
I think if Earl and I had played more of it, it may have.
I don't know. Going by how you play games and how Earl play games, like, I think the gameplay and the fact that it's not particularly good might. Mm.
But I could see it making the top 10.
Yeah.
I could see, like, again, it's not that I'm not having fun with it. It's just, like, I find so far that it's an interesting story and dynamic. Though I also am very much of the mindset, like, I feel like these choices don't matter.
They don't. I don't think they do at all. It's pretty clear.
Tony, you kind of described it as a more interactive Telltale game.
Yes.
I like Telltale games, so
yeah.
Kind of okay with that.
Yeah.
That was the easiest top 10 list we ever put together.
That's right. Because nobody cares about anything except the top, and we all agreed at the top.
Pretty much. Yeah, and you all have your little pet ones that you get to, like, slip in there, so it's fun. Yeah.
Everybody was surprised after they asked me that Halo Infinite one, I'm sure.
Yeah, for sure.
Shocker. This changed everything. It's a good thing that we started off the episode by talking about not our top tens, because made it listenable.
I thought it was very clear when I first, you know, I'm a couple of hours into it. Like, I'm like, this is totally Game of the Year material. And then, like, I thought I saw some people kind of turn on it after a while, or, like, I don't know where most of the other sites ended up with it, but I don't know. It never changed for me. Like, it was like, this is neat. This is something different. It's a lot of fun. Multiplayer's fun. Like,
yep. And I think we all came out of it going, I can't wait to see what they do next with this. So,
yeah.
And I think we'll get plenty of Halo content over the next year. Hopefully some better thought out than what they've delivered so far.
I enjoyed the last couple hours. They were fine. Settle down, Sean.
This is the other thing with Halo.
I didn't enjoy them as much. Like, I like the open world aspect way more. Yeah. But I kind of expected what was coming at the end. I really did.
That last three, once you get past the towers, the sequencing pieces. Yeah. Once you get past that, it becomes very much a normal Halo game.
Real. That's the part of the game that feels like real Halo. Yes.
Yeah. Like, straight. Like, you know, you get not really fully open world, but, like, there's part with vehicles where you can, like, hijack a tank, and, like, it delivers the hits. The only thing it didn't have was, like, the big escape sequence at the end.
I just say, like, isn't it usually like a big like vehicle like level like solely dedicated to, like?
Yeah, so they don't give you the dedicated vehicle. Like, it's not like, here's the Scorpion and this is the Scorpion level.
But
like,
there was definitely a Scorpion section where you're like, yes. I'm in the Scorpion now, taking out stuff like I have in every other Halo.
Well, game. Yeah, near the end, I was in the Warthog for a minute, but I was like, I did the Warthog level. Like, you know, if you're gonna do this level bullshit, fucking, why is there not this big, like, I forgot, it's like in 4-2, like, I think it was part 4, like, where, like, you're flying a fucking plane at the end, like, I don't know, something like that, like.
Oh yeah, like, I mean, both Reach and 4 had cool, like, flight sequences.
Yeah. Some sort of forced vehicle, like, extended vehicle segment, I don't remember, in the last couple hours.
I think that some of that is just, yeah, there's no forced vehicle, like, there is a section where you should definitely be in a vehicle, yeah, probably.
But it's shorter, like, at least that's how I remember it.
Probably the Covenant tank, you should be in that. because if you're, it's very difficult. I know, because I blew up my tank. But yeah, a game's fun. But it does very much feel like a Halo, right? Like, Halos always have these kind of big lead-ups. Then there's, like, some sort of, like, boss fight or, you know, some sort of big battle. And then it's a little bit more lead-up. And it maybe goes on a little bit longer here, but I don't know. Still thought it was great.
Yeah, I could see where Sean's coming from, but like, I didn't like hate it. I was like, I don't know, it's kind of what I expected, and I was still having fun.
And then throw in just the amount of multiplayer time that we put into it, and it's good stuff. All right, well, I mean,
it's gonna be this easy next year when we do Elden Ring for Game of the Year, right,
guys? I don't know about that.
No. You mean, what do we do? Horizon Forbidden West for Game of the Year? You mean that year?
It probably will be.
You mean that game that we are surprised comes out in 2022 that we announced this Game of the Year as we played
Field. I mean, we know that one's coming, though, right?
God of War. Little Kid's going to be Game of the Year.
I think you said Garfield. I'm like, oh, okay. Yes. Chris is way big on Garfield.
Garfield 2022.
Because I think somebody just announced they're making 3 Garfield games. But I think
I didn't realize that. I know there's that kart racing game, but
I think he's really into Garfield. But...
No, it's going to be Mario Kart 9, Jeff.
Hey, I say it every year.
I don't know. That's one thing about this year. Like, there doesn't... We know a lot of, like, big names that are coming, but I think we could be very divided.
Yeah. No, next year will not be as easy.
I honestly, like,
already okay. Right now, we can just cross them all out. Total War Warhammer 3.
I know mine's going to be Elden Ring. Like, my Elden Ring will be above Breath of the Wild 2 for me. Like, there's no doubt.
I was going to ask, what if Breath of the Wild 2 comes out? And
there's no, like, maybe like Breath of the Wild 2 will give me recency bias, but like, I know what From Software
I can do.
Like,
I can't wait until like 3 months from now where Jeff talks about how Elden Ring disappointed him.
Like, I gave up on this stupid fucking eyeball.
That's what's going to kill Jeff, is the fact that it came out at the beginning of the year and he has plenty of time to turn on it.
Yeah. No, but I really, like, I would be shocked. It would be, like, worse than Metroid Dread this year if Elden Ring was not my Game of the Year next. We'll see.
We will see. I don't know. I don't know what's going on for next week, because...
I mean, hopefully nobody buys anybody else.
Anyone else want to make, like, long shot predictions? You saying Horizon, Tony?
I mean...
Chris could play this audio back next year, like, of us all being wrong.
I definitely think that Total War Warhammer 3 and Horizon will both feature prominently on my list.
I am going to declare it right now that the 2022 Game of the Year is something that we do not know is out in 2022 yet.
Okay. Dark Frontiers is coming out.
Yeah, but Earl just said it's going to be a game we don't know about yet.
I know, but it's going to be Sonic for two.
Well, it could be a game we know about, but not. It could be. What is that? What is that other Bethesda game? The one with the vampires?
Oh, Redfall.
Is that what it's called?
I probably.
Who's making that?
Arcane.
Yes.
Oh yeah, I remember that trailer.
Redfall. Yep. Do have a fairly good memory sometimes. It's Redfall by Arcane. It is due in September. Which I don't know. Yeah, that's one where we only got like a cinematic trailer for that. So
I'm not saying it's that one, but I'm saying that that's an example of a game where I think like it's something that I don't think. Like, I think the big ones are like Elden Ring, Horizon, God of War, Valkyrie. What is it called? Breath of the Wild 2 are games that I think
Ragnarok, are right? It's got to be Ragnarok.
Yes. I think those are the ones. I mean, like, I mean, when you think about it, Guardians of the Galaxy was a game that like made all this. We didn't know about that going into last year.
Oh, there's always,
we didn't know about Dread that made all this. We didn't know about Cruel Blast going into the. I mean, that's number 10, but that made all this as well. Yeah. So I think the game of the year will be something that will come out and come out and surprise people.
Those are the best ones.
I hear you. It'd be cool, but I think if the ones that we know are coming out, it'll be one of those.
I mean, if the ones we know are coming out, it's going to be a very stacked year.
It's going to be a much rougher discussion.
I do hope for some surprises. I mean, we'll get them, but
Sonic Frontiers.
Be Shredder's Revenge.
Oh God!
Sonic Frontiers will like surprise you all with how good it is when you buy it and play it. You're like, oh my god, this is the best Sonic game I've ever played in my life.
Yep, we'd have to actually buy it and play it for that to happen. So.
Earl, come on, help me out.
I mean, I will say actually probably buy it because I am not Jeff, but I am probably like two levels down from that Sonic stuff. Where if you hope. But on the flip side, I bought Sonic Mania. I don't think I've bought a 3D Sonic game since Colors on the Wii. So I've not bought Frontiers. What was
Forces. Sonic?
Forces, yes.
Forces is good, dude. Forces is good. I'm telling you. Like, it's not amazing. It's good.
Forces, Lost World, Boom.
Lost World.
I own Generations, so I think Generations is the last one I bought.
Yeah, that's the best one.
All I'll right.
Playing that again.
Yeah,
we got the Sonic discussion in on our game of the year list.
It's the closest as I'm going to come.
I slipped it in.
I can't wait for next year when we have the very special category of video game movie of the year because we got three of them this year. I think it's going to be Mario Sonic Uncharted, but we'll see.
I don't know. I think they'll be bad. They'll all be terrible.
Well, I like the first Sonic movie.
Hold me on that.
Yeah, I mean, that first Sonic movie is good.
It's fine, but...
It's enjoyable for what it is.
Yeah. The Mario film is animated.
Yes.
That has potential to not be terrible.
But it's also animation, so that can go either way.
Yes.
But, I just want the original Mario movie on fucking streaming somewhere. Or like Blu-ray. Give me that fucking movie.
Can we get True Lies streaming somewhere?
Yes, True Lies is my priority, even though
Dude, True Lies was on something like last year. I swear it was on HBO or something.
It comes on streaming every so often. It will come on a service. Yeah. Like, you can't rent it or buy it on any streaming service.
No, I know. It needs a 4K. Like... I don't understand.
Because I mean, good on him, but I guess he has some contract. Like they can't reach the 4K, but like he wants to do it himself, and he's in between.
Bro, what are we like? Let's go, dude! I know you're making fucking 18 avatars, but
well, it was that, and he just in the abyss. Yeah, he just finished that. So this is the next one.
Abyss is a big get too. I haven't seen that in like fucking 30 years, but I remember liking it.
Don't think I've ever seen it.
I remember thought it was cool. And I was pretty young when I saw it.
We have a not video game movie we can watch, Earl.
Yeah.
We should do that again this year. Maybe a couple times where we watch a I don't know how but did not get any feedback on that episode, but that was fun.
Yeah,
the commentary.
Fuck yeah, I would love to do commentaries.
All right. We'll be back next week. I don't know with what. We haven't actually talked about games we played in
so bit, bad.
So
can't wait. Sonic episode coming.
We'll do that. Yeah. Jeff, say good night.
Good night.